Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, we have a show where we're going to look at some major events that have just occurred.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I got my cup of tea here just to establish that I am, it's my New Year's resolution with more tea.
Do you want to talk about?
It's a black tea with some ginger in it.
So it's just a ginger
like
black
tea? It's not like I added, ginger's in the tea leaves. It's like dried. So it's in my category of caffeinated teas with adulterations.
Is there a make or a brand that you want to shout out? Like it is a Johnson's blackened ginger smash?
Because I don't remember what it is.
Okay.
Two, it's part of a set of stuff that another member of the household gave me. So I haven't moved on to actually shopping for teas because I got all these different varieties of teas in the first place.
Did it come in a nicely colored little bag? Like, is this a bag tea or is this loose leaf tea?
It actually came in little loose leaf.
Oh, this is the whole point, right? Yeah. Okay.
Well, this is what I said. And the resolution was to have loose leaf teas, a finer type of tea.
See, I remember your resolution slightly differently. I do remember you discussing loose leaf, but I thought the resolution was just to be drinking more tea. I didn't realize we were going
to. The resolution was to have more tea, but I wanted to just the resolution for bourbon and things before it, I wanted to savor more sophisticated levels of tea.
And so you believe you're going to make the statement when we do our resolution show in about 10 months, I guess you're going to take the position that a loose leaf tea is somehow more sophisticated than a tea bag.
Yes.
Okay.
But that's a well-established fact, but we digress.
All right, I'll let you get there in 10 months' time because I need to. I'm going to throw a market yourself down with now it, yeah. That I will be opposing that conjectural opinion.
Comes from the person who grew up with instant coffee, so.
Yeah, that's very true. Listen to our coffee review show from last summer, last August?
Yeah.
Was that last year's review?
It was warm enough that we were going around outside without jackets on.
Yeah, so go back through the archives at either Libsyn or on the blog and find our coffee review show where we actually tested some instant coffee. Yeah. Anyway, some big events.
Before I do that, what's on your iPad? What's that taped on there?
Oh, because the thing is broken.
The camera?
Yeah.
So would you,
it's the plastic and I smashed it.
So oh, it's like literally physically broken. Yeah. It looks like, some people cover the cameras on their computers just in case somebody's looking at them.
I would have done it the other way. It's all there. It's broken there.
Wow.
It's smashed. This is a first generation.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right.
So, anyway. big events. Last week was the Super Bowl.
Right.
And we were going to talk a little Super Bowl, not to look at the game, but we were talking about halftime specifically and how you'd made the point that Beyonce.
Well, it became more of a story than the Super Bowl. I mean, the Super Bowl was not what you call a great Super Bowl. Fascinating for its level of defense. Surprised a lot of people that the Broncos won instead of the Panthers.
Who are favored by 5.5.
You're moving around and making me distracted.
No, I was looking for a pen. I don't have one because I was going to note down what I was going to say. But
I probably have a pen somewhere.
You don't need to.
But so the halftime show, though, was ostensibly Coldplay was the center person in the halftime show.
Well, yes.
And then Beyonce comes. Actually, I guess Bruno Mars came first and then Beyonce came on, I think.
I don't remember. But I remember Bruno Mars has only been on it. He was only on it a couple of years ago.
Right.
Or maybe last year when he did Uptown Funk, he did again.
And so this became a bigger story in the aftermath of the Super Bowl than the actual Super Bowl, where everybody was like, oh my goodness, Coldplay got totally shown up by these other acts, and it was about how these were much more vibrant and interesting acts. And then particularly because Beyonce rolled out a new song, I think she just released it the day before, called Formation.
Okay.
So usually when we get these halftime shows, you get their hits. I mean, Bruno Mars, I think, did Uptown Funk, which was what is that, a two-year-old song now at this point?
Coldplay was
doing all these songs that we'd all heard a bajillion times already.
It was interesting, because I'd read something on Monday that there was an article that apparently, and I know there tends to be a lot of Coldplay hate in the media. And I'm going to say that. I don't have an opinion.
They're not a
way.
Critic's darling. They're a popular band that people go, like the people who write for Paste magazine or whatever it is, Pitchfork or something.
Yeah, so I'd read somewhere that apparently, because Coldplay were the first band that were announced.
Yeah. Because technically, I don't think Beyonce was ever like announced as a halftime thing. It was sort of a surprise. Everybody, it was a well-known surprise, but it was not part of the...
Before I get to what I was going to say, apparently Coldplay had got into a bit of trouble because they had tweeted the minute they'd known they were doing the Super Bowl. Whoever does the Twitter for Coldplay, or what's his name, the lead singer, Chris Martin?
Yeah.
He tweeted, Coldplay so excited to do the Super Bowl. And then someone out there had sort of then followed up with some sort of press release that, well, it's not just Coldplay. Because I guess there was a sense that Coldplay on their own, unlike the Rolling Stones or the Who or even Aerosmith. Yeah.
They're not as big as the center people from some other years.
I'd read some stories on Monday that apparently Coldplay had sent some suggested songs to play that they would either play around or with Beyonce, and Beyonce's people had said, no, we're not going to be doing those. And of course, the story in the British press had been Coldplay slapped down by Beyonce.
So I, you know, as I'm thinking about it, this would have been smart for us to have queued up the song formation, but we didn't. So
yeah.
So be it. So she rolls out this song formation. So story number one is that everybody's saying, oh, you know, Coldplay got shown up in their own thing. And boy, Bruno Mars and Beyonce were so more impressive. And boy, they really danced it up. And meanwhile, like Chris Martin is doing his like little crouch thing between the two of them walking down the stage. I mean, I don't make much of that, but it was in terms of the Twitter, you know, atmosphere, the Twitter sphere, whatever they call it.
I actually felt that was actually a bit unfair.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of any of these three particular people or groups. I thought Beyonce was, I mean, they all met a certain level that you expect from the Super Bowl halftime show. I wasn't sitting there going, oh, so-and-so really sucked. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I didn't really see. No. What I'm saying is I thought it was part of this narrative of take some shots at Coldplay.
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think they were that bad. They were Coldplay.
Yeah, yeah.
If you think that they suck, then you're going to think they suck anyway.
Right. So then the second story that comes, so this song that she rolls out, Formation, this is where I'm starting to think, well, it would be nice to actually know what the song says. I don't know whether the song's got the words or the way they did a dancing formation. It was very very Michael Jackson formation type dancing, or Janet Jackson formation type dancing. And apparently they were all dressed people were saying very Black Panther-ish kind of thing and did the fist up in the air. And there's definitely some notion that the song is in support of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Okay.
The video apparently, which we didn't say anything of in the show, but apparently the video that when you go online and watch this, see the song, has her like sitting on a car half underwater in Katrina in like New Orleans. And so it's all about, you know, people not caring. It's got a political message to it.
Okay.
People really raving about the song. I mean, I haven't listened to it enough to know, is it a really good song? But it then became a political debate there where then people, some were saying, oh, NFL needs to apologize because she's taking a position against police officers.
Some people were unhappy.
They were cyber protesting or literally physically protesting somewhere. But in any event, that became the second part of the story. So meanwhile, this has gone on since the Super Bowl, and one, you know, it's like in the news cycle, a little bit here, a little bit forward, a little backwards, and people taking different positions. Meanwhile, everybody's completely forgotten about the Super Bowl. I don't know when the heck Peyton Manning is going to retire is my important question.
Well, I do want to make a serious point about a trivial subject. And I remember we did watch the Super Bowl together with a number of other people at a Super Bowl party function. And I do remember we had the discussion at halftime about how I think we were all waxing nostalgic about Super Bowl halftimes of the past.
Yeah, because at the beginning of it, they ran all those clips from all the Super Bowls.
That's right.
There's a brief moment when something, like I think the first thing they showed was Bruce Springsteen sliding out. And we thought that was actually part of the show. Yeah. Like, oh, wow, Bruce. Oh, no,
that's right.
That's the old broadcast.
They did not show Janet Jackson's nipple.
No,
obviously. That didn't make an appearance.
They didn't even show Janet Jackson, I don't think. So.
But I think I remember that led into a discussion that I remember there was a time in the late 80s or early 90s where other TV networks, including MTV,
they were competing halftime,
specifically counter-programmed against Super Bowl halftime, and for a time,
not just the Puppy Bowl.
At the time that the official Super Bowl halftime was, outshone by... Mm-hmm. I mean, I do remember turning over 1 year years ago to see who MTV had on their halftime show.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I don't remember who was on. I mean, I guess you could probably pull it all up. But then the NFL really amped up their game where they had U2, they had The Who, they had like some major majors.
And so that was my point, that somehow... around that time, the Super Bowl halftime became a thing of its own, and it now generates... That was my basic point, is that we've had this whole week since the game, and obviously, because the game kind of sucked as a game, it wasn't a very exciting game, there were two news stories coming out of the Super Bowl. One was the sulky behavior by the losing quarterback being very curt in his press conference, and the other story was all about Beyonce at halftime. This is no different than last year, when all the talk after... what was a terrific game between the Patriots and the Seahawks, there was a lot of talk all week about the left shark.
Do you remember? Yeah. Well, that was just sort of funnier.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is it seems that the Super Bowl halftime show...
Back when you pull... I'm just pulling up Wikipedia's list of Super Bowl halftime shows, and there's Katy Perry and the Sharks.
What I'm saying is the Super Bowl halftime show has now become... I would proffer...
Yeah, prior to the early 1990s, halftime show was based around a theme and featured university marching bands.
Right, what I'm saying is I would proffer that the Super Bowl halftime show is now bigger than the other traditional Super Bowl cultural story, which is the ads.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Everyone's always talked about Super Bowl commercials, and, you know, for years, right, everyone would then, and even now, you can listen to talk radio the next day or watch entertainment TV, or even around your office water cooler, people will be discussing what commercial they like the most. Mm-hmm. But I have found now, in my opinion, the halftime show and discussing the aftermath of that is now even bigger than the commercials. Do you know what I mean? There's the game, and then there's everything else around the Super Bowl, whether it be the commercials, the halftime show. I know we all took a gamble on the length of the national anthem this year, sung by Lady Gaga, and I heard a couple of days later that people were saying that, she was trying to out Whitney Houston. What I'm saying is all these other things now seem... not peripheral, but they run on a parallel cultural track to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And out of those things...
they're separate. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but out of those things, it seems that at the moment, the halftime show is now the premier cultural event of the Super Bowl rather than the commercials. That's the only point I wanted to make. And if you said to me, what commercials did you like most last week? I could probably only name one or two, which maybe indicates the fact that, you know, the fact that we're talking about the halftime show... is that the halftime show itself is now the number one extracurricular interest of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, I'll buy that. So it looks like I'm looking back, and like it looks like 1991 is really when I made a transition. In 1990, it was...
Fox did something when before they had the Super Bowl. The MTV had their Super Bowl halftime. And I'm trying to think back to those halftimes of marching bands and acrobats and, you know, circus acts. And it's only been, I mean, now if you watch the Super Bowl, there's even acts before the game that have a slot either outside the stadium.
Yeah, we don't watch any of that.
No, but I mean, all that sort of exists that, you know, and depending.
Maybe that's where the marching bands are.
Depending, well, no, I think the marching bands, they've just been relegated completely. I think it's all now singers. And depending when you are slotted, obviously being in the halftime show is a prime slot. Being asked to do the anthem is a prime slot. Obviously, if you're doing some pregame show on a stage, either outside the stadium or inside the stadium, I think it's fair to say that you are of a lower... than Beyonce and even Coldplay, who probably wouldn't approve of being doing a pregame Super Bowl show set.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so there you go. That's our analysis of Super Bowl halftime.
That's right.
I'm not going to lie to you. When the stories came out about Beyonce, it shows how unclued in I am.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was another dance routine with one lady singing and a whole load of people dressed the same way dancing around behind her. I didn't realize
the fact that they were.
And I'm not belittling the cause in any way. I'm just saying, I didn't realize there was anything to it.
Other than the way they were dressed, and like, it definitely had somebody could have told me afterwards that it was really about a women empowerment thing, like, or something, you know, like a Janet Jackson. Meaning, there was enough stridency to the way it was done. It wasn't.
I thought she was just wearing black leather.
It wasn't a party song.
You look better in black leather.
Who doesn't? That's what that's my point. That's what I wear almost every day.
Yeah, I mean, Bruno Mars was dressed in dark, leathery he was dressed in some sort of dark outfit as well.
Yeah, Chris Martin was dressed like all white. It was very, were really like patterning themselves.
Well, he was dressed like a member of Coldplay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there were a lot of colors in the field. Maybe that, I mean, listen, aesthetically, somebody must have made the contrast. Because, I mean, not only was he dressed that way, but they were doing their songs that like had all this floral stuff and whatever.
All right, so that's the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Before we get to some of my main topics, the big news this week that I discovered, big news to me, I don't know if it's big news to anyone else, is the fact that, and we again, we will put this article up on the blog, there's Universal, the movie production company.
Right.
They obviously own the rights to Battlestar Galactica.
Well, obviously. What do you mean, obviously?
You mean they obviously own the rights, or
like the sentence there? They obviously own the rights. They obviously own. I mean, is that obvious to anybody? Did anybody know that before you just told them?
I think Battlestar Galactica fans who are interested in what I'm about to say
are Battlestar Galactica fan listeners. Okay.
I think NBC Universal owned the rights to Battlestar Galactica, even though I don't think the TV show originally ran on NBC way, way back in the day. And I know you are looking all that stuff up now. NBC Universal, though, they did run the reboot. That's now about 10, 12 years old. It originated on their on the US cable channel Sci-Fi, which is now part of the now. I don't know if it was then. I think it was sort of a peripheral channel owned by NBC Universal. But anyway, Universal owned the rights to they own the intellectual rights. That was the phrase I'm looking for.
First run was on ABC.
The intellectual rights to Battlestar Galactica. They've made an announcement this week that they are looking to see whether they can reboot Battlestar Galactica, not as a TV series, but as a big screen franchise, obviously, in a strange sense of history repeating itself, looking to cash in on all the money made by Star Wars.
Right.
And so...
And repeating itself, of course, people don't know. Like, so Battlestar Galactica came out in 1978, the original TV series, and was very clearly inspired by the original Star Wars. And realizing a reason, oh, we can come up with a space franchise. I mean, there are a number of parts that are quite resembling, you know, like instead of stormtroopers in the white plastic, they had the Cylons in the silver plastic. I guess it was supposed to be metal or chrome or something like that. But the baddies on that side were in that.
No, I have it plugged in the wrong thing. Please go ahead and keep killing time.
Okay.
My partner cannot hear because he didn't bring his headphones. I'm currently playing...
The original Battlestar Galactica.
The original intro to the original Battlestar Galactica with the uncredited Sir Patrick McNee. He was always the voice of the original Cylons.
Right, right.
And again, I know you can't hear this, but on the on the original
fascinating podcast.
On the original
Do tell me what's going on.
The listeners can hear this.
Yeah.
On the original show, he did the voiceover about a million years ago. Our brethren lived in, you know, man was born in outer space and now he's looking for a
way. Do you want to
explain
the plot of Battlestar Galactica? That's common to both of them, we should say, to some degree. It fits with another thing we've discussed on the podcast, right? The notion that human life didn't come from Earth, that it came from somewhere else and was sort of dispersed amongst various spots. Earth is one of the groups.
That's right. Now, I watched all of the new Battlestar Galactica. I think it's one of the greatest TV shows.
Yeah.
I never watched the original Battlestar Galactica. That being said, you're asking me to describe the plot, the whole premise between Battlestar Galactica.
It's really not the plot, it's the premise.
All I know is it's people flying through space and they're fighting.
Oh, come on. You're a fan, so you can't pretend you don't know exactly what it's about.
No, but you just tested me and I had to stop for a minute there. But so basically, there are all these colonies of humans.
Right.
And
I thought the idea was like the folks from Earth almost never didn't even know that they were from this group. Although in the new series, they did know, didn't they? Because they went out looking for other people. In any event, in the original one, it was like people ran away from Earth and they're
trying to get home.
Yeah, or trying to find a place to go, you know.
Okay.
But ultimately, it's this ragtag group of refugees basically running from place to place, which gives you, for a TV series, obviously gives you the opportunity. You can
basically, when you say ragtag, it was basically the second bananas from Bonanza, Streets of San Francisco in the 80s.
Right.
Because they're the three dudes, Lorne Greene, Richard Hatch, who was on the Streets of San Francisco after Michael Douglas. And if you don't watch any of these shows, you're completely lost.
Right.
And then Face Man from the original A-Team, started life as Starbuck or Apollo on Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, right. Okay.
Then he went to become Face Man on the A-Team.
Yes.
Which is another one of the greatest TV shows of all time, in my opinion.
See, I mean, like, it comes right after Luke Skywalker, and they come up with a character that's Starbuck.
Which is our original point, was that basically Battlestar Galactica was TV knockoff of Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, knockoff is probably too strong a word in the sense that it was a completely different plot. It was like the whole thing with Star Wars is it's somewhere else. At least Battlestar Galactica was saying it's based on Earth. I mean, the notion it's us in the future kind of thing. So, but in terms of the idea of being out in space and filming things in space and having ships,
what I mean was
dogfights in space kind of thing. That was very,
people forget that pre-Star Wars, and this is why the point I'm trying to make is why it's relevant now. Pre-Star Wars, the cinema had, you know, sci-fi film every couple of years, a disaster movie, a cop movie. Star Wars came along, and then all of a sudden, every other form of cultural entertainment wanted to cash in on this space craze.
Right.
So you had, you know, other movies. For example, people always talk about, when you read up about Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the unfairest thing said about Close Encounters of the Third Kind is that it's part of the space craze.
Right, right.
Even though at the end of the day, to me, it's not really. It's an entirely different sort of film than a fantasy film set in space. But then all of a sudden you had, you know, cartoons on TV. And the next thing you know, Star Trek is rebooting itself in the film. Because Star Trek, the TV series was dead and gone.
That movie where they use video game, Last Starfighter.
So what I'm saying is the success of Star Wars in you know, classic, there's no such thing as a original idea in Hollywood. Everyone was running around trying to do their space vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is my interest in this story is the fact that now, 40 years later, Star Wars has returned, sucked up all kinds of money, and someone somewhere is going, let's reboot Battlestar Galactica. And in a strange way, they tend to have forgotten that they only just rebooted Battlestar Galactica to great critical, I would imagine, financial acclaim.
Well, you know,
interesting how these things.
Also, I mean, like, a bunch of the movie studios right now are clearly thinking better than trying to figure out how to develop individual movies is a franchise. You know, when you look at the Marvel stuff, you look at the James Bond stuff, you look at things where people go, you know, Bourne is now going to be coming out with another movie.
Yeah.
You know, the Mission Impossible things, the Fast and Furious is up at 6, whatever, and people are realizing, you know what, it's a lot simpler to take the intellectual property we have and do a new script and update things. People will come back.
Yes.
You know, you've got a certain built-in base of then try to build from the ground up and convince a bunch of people to go see something new.
Because apparently they're waiting for James Cameron. I don't know whatever company, James Cameron, who made Titanic, who made Aliens, who made Terminator, but most famously, I think his last film, because he really doesn't work in, he works sporadically in Hollywood now. His last film, which I didn't see, was Avatar, which was basically the first ever highly successful 3D of the modern age.
Sure.
And I never saw Avatar, but it made stacks of cash.
Yeah, it was tons.
The same article that you can find on the blog that talks about Battlestar Galactica also says that James Cameron, that whoever it is, Paramount or whoever, or 20th Century Fox, are waiting around for him to come back with his ideas as for how he will have follow-up movies to Avatar, and then they will bankroll it because this is our franchise. So that's an example to your point that, yes, we've said for a couple of years now, everyone is looking for their franchise that they can just hopefully, you know, just, you know, continue to put money in and draw even greater money out. The only thing I found interesting about Battlestar Galactica is that it is so clearly, I don't care what anyone says, it's so clearly an attempt to jump on the modern space craze.
Yeah.
And that's why the question in this article was, would they be rebooting new Battlestar Galactica or the old one, which we just listed all the people.
I gather there's a segment of people in the world who don't even like respect the rebooted one from 2004. Is that when
apparently,
it came out,
I can't remember now. Apparently, if you're one of those fans who believe that only
do they have different names?
They do have names. They're like Galacticans or something.
Uh huh.
And because apparently, I remember the first time I ever heard this. This is going back to the 90s. I was out with someone socially. I was on a date, and for some reason, we ended up talking about Battlestar Galactica. And she told me, oh, don't you know that there's a whole group of people who are heavily into the late 70s Battlestar Galactica. And like Star Trek, there is a whole cottage industry of books that have been written.
Right, fan fiction.
Fan fiction. But apparently, Richard Hatch, who was in the original Battlestar Galactica, he's written a couple of books himself. They have their own conventions. But this has been going on since the 80s, which is why when the new Battlestar Galactica came along, all the old school guys were very angry because they didn't believe that new Battlestar Galactica is canon.
Right. Canon being like canon the phrase for geeks who do this stuff. Basically, is it in the same continuum and realm of stories, or is it like a sort of an offshoot that like a reboot?
And anyway, I found this fascinating when I first heard this 20 years ago, because to be honest with you, I thought the original Battlestar Galactica sucked. I thought it looked cheesy. There was... Was that the one with the little robot?
It didn't have any...
Bleep, 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 bleep.
No, that's Buck Rogers.
But it had like Muppets in it. There was some like a talking teddy bear or something in the original Battlestar Galactica.
They had a... Oh, now I'm mixing them up. Did they have the dog? The dog thing with like...
There you go. Some sort of animal. I don't think it was clearly a dog. It was some sort of four-legged furry animal, like a cross between a dog and Ted. Ted. I always now... Yeah. Now in my memory has now been supplanted by Ted, the talking teddy bear. So when I think and of
the,
old school...
The bleedy, bleedy, bleedy guy is that's like... Buck Rogers. It's Theopolis or whatever the heck is. It's the one that's hanging around the neck of the little robot guy.
Is
like
that...
It's technically two different
Buck
robots.
Rogers?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but there was like some sort of an animal, but it talked in Battlestar Galactica, the original Battlestar Galactica. Anyway, when I think of the original Battlestar Galactica, I think of a cheesy 1970s TV series that sucks. That's what I think.
Yeah.
So
that wasn't very good.
Obviously, I'm not going to lie. If they rebooted that one, I'm probably giving it a miss.
Yeah. Well, they would have, like, the thing is, they would have to revise it. Like, because the new series had a lot of more themes, and they would have to do something along those lines.
Again, I think the new series is one of the greatest 60 hours of TV. I mean, maybe one. No, okay, it's one of the greatest admittedly, 60 hours of sci-fi.
Admittedly, TV. You don't watch any HBO, so...
We can get to that. I do. One of the ideas we are throwing around for some moment this year, we are going to take a look at what we think are our best... Each of us are going to pick our three or four best TV series of all time. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. The new Battlestar Galactica is good enough to be in the conversation on my side. What I'm saying is the new Battlestar Galactica is light years away, in my mind, from the original.
Mm-hmm.
And now if you don't watch sci-fi, you're already reaching for the switch, because I'm now going to quickly comment on another sci-fi series. There's new Doctor Who and there's old Doctor Who. I find, and again, Doctor Who, the British TV series about the time-traveling alien... The new Doctor Who shares so many different traits with the old one that there's no fans who only watch one. I think there's fans who only watch the new ones, but there's no fans who watch the old ones who go, the new ones suck. Whereas Battlestar Galactica, in comparison, has fans of the old one who won't go anywhere near the new one. And I just find that interesting because I think the old one's cheesy.
You know, it's actually an interesting thought about that is... It's got to make, like, you know, you want to have a built-in fan base. And if your fan base is already divided, whatever you pick is going to rule out a bunch of people. So don't be so confident you've got a winning proposition.
Of course, this sounds really horrible now. You can also gamble that it's best to go with the new one. Because let's be honest, I'm sure a percentage of your fan base of the old one are no longer of an age where they are going to the cinema. I mean, that's a 40-year-old TV series.
Yeah, although by the same token, remember, you know, one of the reasons they might be going for the old one, now that I think about it, right, is we talked last time about the Star Wars, about the fact that it was essentially appealed to kids at that point when the originals came out. So that's now you got a bunch of 40 to 50-year-olds who are into the new one because of what they have from the old one. So now if you're going to bring back Battlestar Galactica and you want to actually tap into a similar thing, you kind of want to go back to the old one. Like, because a bunch of us watch – I mean, you watch the original. Even though you think it stunk, you watch it as a kid. And a lot of kids, particularly American kids – I mean, some segment of it. It's not like Star Wars level. But a bunch of kids who saw the first one around would probably be more excited about the new one. I bet you – I mean, I'd be among – well, though I did ultimately watch the new series. But there's probably a ton – people who watch the new series are not the same set of people who, like, did it on a nostalgia basis for the old one. They watched it just because it was a new series.
Yes. And I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, before we move on to our next topic, which is going to fit in very nicely with this topic.
Mm-hmm.
I just asked you about the bleep, 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 and you're like, yeah, that's from Buck Rogers. It only just occurred to me again right now that TV Buck Rogers from the 1970s is actually a reboot, of original Buck Rogers from 40 years before that, which all proves my continuing point that there's no such thing as a fresh idea anymore. Right. So anyway, Battlestar Galactica might be coming back.
Yep.
If it does, well, we'll see what happens.
Yep.
So our other big news of the week, and you've researched this.
From fictional space news to real space news.
Which I will debunk by using fiction.
I'm going to debunk
the science of this by using fiction.
So, people may have seen that the...
And if you haven't seen this, my partner pulls up really, the information, it's not this so has much been a big story.
Yeah, oh yeah.
This hasn't just been on geek websites. It's been on, you know, major US and UK and Western news services have all run a story about this amazing scientific discovery.
Yeah.
So again, if you're out there and you're like, I don't know what these two are talking about, it's because you're not well informed. It's not because we're just talking about science.
Yeah, I hesitate to even call it a discovery in the sense that they actually found proof of.
Yeah, it's a discovery.
A gravitational wave.
All right.
So this is something that's theorized back all the way to a part of Einstein's theories. I mean, almost exactly 100 years ago when he was developing his whole general theory of relativity and talking about time – well, not time travel, but talking about the effects. What are you going to play? I mean, you can't play things over me when I don't know what's going on.
No, I'm
going
to tell you.
No, but it could be like – it could be yakety sax. What are we playing here?
I'm turning up here.
You have to at least tell me what it is so I know what I'm talking over.
You're talking over Donald Sutherland talking about negative waves.
What are you talking about? Put on the headphones
and you can listen. You know what I'm talking about.
No,
I've seen this many times. If you've ever seen the movie Kelly's Heroes with Donald Sutherland, a Clint Eastwood war movie from 1971, Donald Sutherland plays a tank driver in World War II who acts like a hippie and he keeps telling everyone, what's with the negative waves?
Always with the negative
I'm not going to talk that way. You can't try to undercut true science with some sort of comedic type of effect here.
I'll turn that down because you didn't have your headphones.
Turn it down. It's off, right?
Well, it's off to you, but it's not to the listener. Anyway, keep going. You're hitting the listener. I've turned it down. Relax.
Okay, all right.
You're hitting the listener with facts about gravitational waves.
So they discovered a gravitational wave. It was originally postulated by Einstein. He actually, at the time, it was so much on the edge of his discoveries that he sort of went back and forth over time saying, man, maybe there aren't, or maybe there are, maybe there aren't. But it became pretty well established that assuming that you believed in all those theories, assuming all that stuff was proved to true, that they would have to exist.
Okay.
Right? So people have spent time trying to figure out how to detect them, and they really only picked up steam. And there was actually an effort by a guy at a University of Maryland. Unfortunately, I lost all my notes, my handwritten notes. I'm going to miss names and things.
Probably in the same place as your
professor there, who was trying to – he built devices that were intended to detect it. He actually – announced it, I think, in the early 70s or something, that he had detected it, but he really hadn't, and things were debunked and went back and forth. Apparently, up until his death in 2000, he maintained he was detecting these gravity waves, but didn't actually succeed in doing so. But just announced, the scientists came out. Apparently, there was a lot of leakage of this because they were actually detected back in September 14th of 2015. And ever since then, it's been them going over things to make sure it's true, accurate.
The one fellow cried foul a couple
of stuff like that. To make sure they have it all. Then they make the big announcement. And if you could think of an occasion where a bunch of scientists are literally jumping up and down for joy.
It's been everywhere the last week.
I think the money for the – we're going to talk about the detection mechanism and how they detected it, but the money for this project as a whole goes back like 30 years at least. Like the theory for how to design the detection started in this early 70s. There's people who have worked their entire life on this effort to detect gravity waves that would be, detected by – predicted by this theory, and now they've actually done it, and they're tremendously excited, and it opens a whole bunch of worlds for further investigation. And literally, I mean, this is the kind of thing 100 years from now we could look back at this as like a turning point in humanity.
If that's the case, please explain to our listeners what causes a gravitational wave and what is it?
Well, so you have to start with...
Because if you don't explain, I'm going to explain using popular culture, and I'm not sure how scientifically accurate some of my examples are.
So you have to start with what is gravity in the first place, right? Because that is a tough one to prove. There's a notion of, they call them four fundamental forces, or
right.
There's another more updated term for it that doesn't use the word forces. fundamental interactions.
Okay.
And one of them is electromagnetic force.
Okay.
So that's magnets. You know, right. They pull towards each other, whether they're electromagnets or permanent magnets, and there's an attraction that's
everyone based, is aware
based
of
on
that,
the
yeah.
atomic composition.
So she's there's, not as making this up.
There are two things called the weak nuclear force and the strong nuclear force, and those are what hold atoms together. So we don't really experience any of that in regular life, but it's what holds
everything together.
Pieces of the atoms together.
It's what holds everything together.
And then the last one is gravity. And gravity's always been a tough one for people to figure out, well, what is it? What is it? Why do big things? And obviously, like, listen, the simple, we know what the rules of gravity are. It's mass. It's based on mass. Because the Earth is this big, it has X amount of gravity, it holds us down to it. All things with mass have gravity, but you have to have a lot of mass. It's a very weak force relative to the other ones. I mean, you can have a magnet that pulls on something that's, you can hold in your hand and pulls on something as strong as the whole Earth.
Because if it was too strong, it would destroy us.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
that's reality. Well, see, right now, gravity keeps me attached to the floor.
That's right.
Right? So it's a light. It's very light. But if gravity was super strong,
right.
It would force me to collapse into myself.
That's right. And that would be disappointing.
So for you at home who are into science as much as I am, I've just explained
so
it to you.
So I had never, like, I had always heard that, okay, we don't really know what the heck's going on. But in the course of reading articles about this gravity wave, which we'll come back to in a second, I saw one of the most interesting explanations, which actually dates back to Einstein. So it's not like a new explanation.
And we covered Einstein. If you go back to our 2013 Best Of show, you can hear us discuss Einstein's theory of relativity.
His explanation about it was, it isn't that the two things attract each other in the way we think of like a magnet.
Because, and I don't mean to cut you off. When I was a kid, I always assumed gravity was like a big magnet in the Earth, which was why I couldn't leave the Earth.
Right,
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm not being facetious when I say that.
You think of the fact that two things pull towards each other.
Right.
You assume they are doing it to each other.
Right.
Like there's something in this that grabs hold of – there's something that grabs – in the Earth that grabs hold of your feet and holds you to it. Right?
That's why people always say, yes, if Superman can fly, he can – anyone who can fly is defying gravity. So just in the way that we talk about it on the daily basis, there is a sense that it's something that pulls you down to where you stand.
Right.
So obviously, if you're like me and I only use science when applicable to my life, it's like a big magnet in the Earth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know.
Right. So, but what Einstein said is,
and if you're out there and you claim that you've never once thought that, then you're a liar.
What Einstein says is, it's really not right to think of it that way. What it is that all mass has an effect on what they call time space. I get really confused when it gets to the time part, so I'm going to leave that about. But let's just say the fabric of the universe, so to speak.
If you're on a train in a station next to another train and the other train is leaving, that's Einstein's theory of relativity.
We're not going to go to that again. We did that. We've done that in another episode. I'm sure that people enjoyed it quite a bit. So his point was, anything with mass distorts the continuum, the fabric of existence. And we're not talking about mass. We're talking about all mass. We're talking about absence of mass. It is like,
I'm not gonna
like, it's a very difficult thing for us to think about because we can't perceive it the way
we can. If you have a glass of water and you put an ice cube in it, it moves the water around. So the ice cube is demonstrating what I'm saying is, that's sort of an effect of something causing an effect on something else without doing anything. Now, I'm not saying that's gravity, but what I'm saying is gravity is that kind of a force. It's not like a lightning bolt. It's not like a magnet, but it's mass disrupting other things around it.
Yeah,
the same way that when you put an ice cube or anything in a thing of water, it makes the water right. Like it's displacement.
Right. The classic.
You see?
All right, not bad. But the classic example.
Just made that up. I don't even claim to be a scientist.
The classic example is if you have a trampoline and you have a bowling ball in the middle of it.
Okay.
The bowling ball holds it down. You know, you could picture the curve it will make. Like it'll be sort of like an inverted type of curve. It's not like it turns into a bowl. It will have a deepest point and it'll have an arc going up to there. I mean, we can all picture what that would be. And sometimes you see in like little science museums, you'll see the little hole that you put the marble in and it goes around. It's that kind of shape. It's not like a bowl in the sense that it's rounded underneath. It comes down to a point almost.
Yeah.
So you put a bowling ball in the middle of a trampoline. Imagine a big enough trampoline that it like sort of stretches down the center there. And then you put a marble somewhere else on the trampoline. The marble will roll towards that the bowling ball. But clearly, it's not the bowling ball attracting the marble. It's the fact that the bowling ball has created a shape to the terrain
yes.
that leads the things to come together. So that in that sense, that's what essentially gravity is. That mass is distorting the time-space fabric. And so other things come towards it because they're moving along in the time-space continuum, and they're not attracted to the ball, but they go the direction where the ball is because the ball has created a distortion. So like on a universal scale, imagine
unless there's a big magnet in the ball.
Well, it can counter. Well, there you go, imagine like the biggest trampoline you could imagine, football field size, and just bowling balls all over the place, and different size bowling balls and things like that. And so now the whole thing has a terrain. Now, in real life, everything would ultimately come together, because they would all be rolling around. You wouldn't be able to kind of keep them put, but just. Like you have to imagine like an infinitely big trampoline right. where that process would take time, because that's what's happening in the world, the universe, I should say, is, you have all these bodies of mass and they're all having effect on each other, but it may be very faint because they're so diffused around and the like. But, ultimately, first of all, you had the Big Bang, everything shot apart. Now, eventually, everything, the theory will come back together into one unity, whatever amount of time. So look at that as being gravity. And so you've got a terrain. Like, so I was talking to somebody about it yesterday, and they were saying, so we're going to talk about waves. And the
because that's what I wanted to get to, the gravity wave.
So a gravity wave picture, now you've got that terrain, and then you had sort of a vibration run through it.
Okay.
Like, so the classic version of wave would be you're on a pond, you throw a rock
and makes a wave. And if you've seen any of these articles or seen on TV, that tends to be the visual.
The visuals they all show.
That's thrown out there is waves like ripples in a pond.
That's right. So,
but of course, that's different. And again, I want to say this seriously now. We don't, is this a true statement? We don't experience here on Earth gravity in that form. Gravity is a constant force. Otherwise, right. I would be floating when the gravity goes away.
Right. Well, so the waves are so ridiculously subtle. We'll talk about how tiny they are. But it is correct that Earth does Thank not you. Create a gravity wave. It's the bowling ball. Like, the bowling ball is staying still.
Yes.
There's a gravity to it, but it's not a wave. It's just gravity. It's just like a fixed terrain. And so, like, look at the pond is flat. See, the problem with the pond analogy is the pond is flat, and the fabric of that would be like there was nothing out there. Like, there's no Earth.
Yeah,
like,
it's not.
So what you have to sort of picture is, like, what I think about is the trampoline full of all these objects, which are distorting the shape, and then you, like, pinging a part of it or dropping a bowling ball somewhere in it. And so that sends a wave. So, like, even though all these things are there, if you're on the other side, you'd be able to feel the vibration of a bowling ball being dropped at the other end of the gargantuan trampoline.
All right.
So in this case, what Einstein had originally said was, the waves would come from some ridiculous, huge tumults of mass, like just things going on with mass that were just beyond like
our comprehension
of size. And so what this thing detected was two black holes
crashing into each other,
circling around each other, like buzzing, and shoop, come together. And so literally they said, like, when they turned the signal of the wave into like a noise, it went zhoop and made like a chirp, because it was the two black holes coming together, which they do these in solar masses, and I forget the exact solar, meaning the mass of the sun is a counting measurement for big objects.
So okay.
Say like a really big object might be the
17 mass of, suns.
Yeah, like
yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
And I think these things are like, things were in like the 60s, 70s kind of thing. They were black holes that were almost 100-fold bigger.
They had as much energy as
mass.
Much mass as the sun in something that's only 8 miles across.
Right.
That's what I'd written.
So if
you can imagine the sun and all that power, but imagine all that power in your basement.
And then if people don't know, and people probably know this, but like a black hole is a black hole because it has so much mass that the gravity of it
stops
concentrated, keeps light from getting away. So these two things going around, blah, 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 and they zoop together. They literally lost the mass of three suns in the course of doing so, released that as gravity energy, apparently. And that's what sent the wave out.
Okay.
So now that, like I said, gravity, despite the fact that these are huge things, by the time it gets to us, which, by the way, it was...
Because that's my next question. If this is that bad, why aren't we in any danger?
Because
why are we still worried about asteroids? Because
it's still relatively a very weak force. And by the time it got here, this object, like just like we talk about light years away.
I mean, yeah, how far away were these black holes?
I think 300, I want to say a billion light years.
So these waves might not even be here yet. Oh, no, they are. No,
they're here.
They're here
because we can see it. The thing that happened was a billion years ago.
Yeah.
Like, it was, this happened, this, these two things going, although we tend to think, talk about it like, oh, it just happened now and we saw it. We, what we're really seeing is the gravity wave that came from there before there was any life on Earth. Or at least, I think I saw it, they said it's before there was multicellular life. So there might have been like some basic life on Earth.
I think this is the, this is the reason the 13 tribes of Earth were scattered across the galaxy.
So this wave gets here. And so it's always theorized. So this brings us to perfect, okay, detecting it, because we're going to, when we talk about how this is detected, you'll see how infinitesimal this is. So this guy in the 70s says, okay, so when a gravity, I should say, like, because gravity waves are coming through and they literally distort the fabric of life.
Yes.
Or fabric of the universe.
No, I get that.
They literally compress it. Like, and I don't mean compress it like they squeeze you and you're the same amount of stuff. It's like reality compresses a little bit.
Yeah. I mean,
or expands a little bit depending upon what part of the wave you're on.
They warp it.
Yeah, exactly.
They have an effect on it. Yeah, you see.
So like a lot of those things, you know, you see in sci-fi where this stuff happens, you know, like that's the notion, is like there's a wave going through this stuff. So this guy says, well, how are we going to detect that kind of thing? Because how do we figure out what ultimately is going to be a very subtle variance in like the fabric of time space?
Okay.
So this guy comes up with a design in the 70s originally, and it ultimately manifests itself in this plan, which I can't remember. I think they started it in the early 90s or something, like maybe a little bit longer before that. But it's two lasers. Like super pure, perfect lasers.
Okay.
And a super pure, perfect laser has basically one wavelength of light. You know, so like you could picture the little thing that goes up and down, sine.
Yeah, a little wave pattern.
Right. And it's just that one pure thing. You don't have a bunch of, like when regular light, it's a big mass of all the stuff coming through there. So a laser is this perfectly focused piece. You send these two lasers. It actually comes from one laser that's split, like through a little lens.
Okay.
And it goes out 2.5 miles down two perpendicular tubes, like at a 90-degree angle to each other. It then gets reflected off of what they basically say is the world's most perfect mirrors. Like these mirrors are just ridiculous. And the mirrors I read are suspended by, like, it's not even wire. It's some sort of like glass fiber, basically, that basically will shatter. But they get it all propped.
And the mirrors are reflecting it straight back to their source.
So that's going to come. So it goes out in the L shape and the two angles that comes back.
Okay.
Now, if nothing changes and everything's fine, the two lasers will come back in perfect sync, and it's because they're going the exact same distance out and the exact same distance back. And so, like, they basically look at it like they cancel themselves out. So you got a detector there who's detecting the lasers and says, okay, look, they came right back together.
So nothing weird going on. No gravitational waves.
Right. If you have a wave that washes across stuff in reality,
it will affect
them. One of those will get a little longer or shorter than the other one. So now they'll come back out of phase. Like the two lasers will be slightly out of sync. And then you can measure how that's the pattern of that doing that. They now have two of these things. They have one of these in Louisiana and the other one's out in Washington, meaning the state. And the idea being, if there's a wave like this, it's going to cover the Earth. And you want to avoid, like, if you got one of them, but not the other one, you'd say that something's wrong. Because if it's a wave that's coming,
someone would have just knocked the mirror.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, apparently
they have a whole bunch of, I think it's computerized ways of teasing out all the earthbound variables, like, you know, seismic events, trucks driving by. Apparently they did some tests where some guy, like, driving his Harley motorcycle, like right next to the machine, but it's all designed to tease it out, and it showed no signal from that vibration.
Or dropping a bowling ball right next to the machine,
to bring back bowling balls. So this wave, when it comes back, the variance that they actually detected was like a thousandth of a atomic particle, like of a proton or a nucleus or something like that. And we're talking about like stuff that you need
some sort of super machine. Like, we would never notice it.
Atomic microscope, to figure out what it is in the first place. But it's very distinctly, it went to the two places, it landed at the two places a millisecond apart.
Okay.
So they could figure out, like, basically, you know, when you picture, like, if you have two towers and the two, you can kind of point to which direction something came from.
Yeah.
Because if it had a little longer trajectory to get to one, and so this is how they oriented around there. And so it's detecting this wave running through there. And so very much like radio waves or light for that matter, you know, like, you know, light is just a version of radio waves, like radio, gamma rays, X-rays, they're all electromagnetic waves. which fits in with our magnetic force.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And that's the corollary, that electromagnetic waves are related to electromagnetic force.
I wish scientists had more terminology. It's very lazy doing everything a version of the same thing, because it's confusing to me who still believes that there's a big magnet in the Earth.
Right. So just like that, just like we detect, like we have, obviously people know telescopes that see light. We see the sun, we see the moon, we blow that stuff. We can look at it very closely. They, of course, they've made these radio telescopes that are designed to detect things that we can't see. So, like, because all the bodies of the universe and such bodies give off other waves that we don't physically
different forms of radiation.
See, but we can create event essentially a great antenna to perceive those and figure out, okay, that's coming from over there. That means this is happening. You know, things in the X-ray mean this. You know, gamma rays mean this. All these sort of stuff. You can figure out what it is. So now we've opened a whole new realm of stuff to see this way. Trying to think if I missed any points on that.
How is the...
One of the crazy things. So this whole thing was set up. It's cost about $1 billion have been sunk into this thing. And a bunch of people were a little pissed when they first started doing it. I think when they first set it up...
Oh, because they'd been spending years not finding anything.
Well, even when they started, a bunch of classic astronomers who were like, that's $200 and something million of grant money and government money and things like that we could be dedicating to the things that we know exist. And you're gonna spend aliens. All this money on things that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And when they had the whole thing set up the first time around, didn't detect anything. And they're like, well, this is really turned into a big bust. They then took it all offline and upgraded all the sensitivity. They literally, this detection they detected was the day after they turned it on.
So it could have been going on for a while.
Right. Exactly. And they said basically the level of this was just below their old detection threshold.
Okay.
So, like, when they turned it on, a bunch of people said, oh, we expect to catch something in the next year or two or something like that. And literally the next day.
The next day.
And so one of the things they had, like, so a bunch of people didn't believe, like, who worked there, didn't believe it was real, because they have a process on this whole array where they put in false signals.
Okay.
To just test people and make sure they're on the up and up. So, like, I figure there's some phrase they use, which I don't have in front of me, where they drop it in there. And they would drop this signal in, and then people would be like, oh, it looks like a thing. And then you would go through the process to be like, ah, it's not real.
It's not, yeah.
And so everybody thought this was bogus, because the next day after we turned this thing on, how could this possibly happen that we detect this stuff? And so they went all the – this is why they've been spending all this time going over stuff, and people said, no, this is not a plant item. But of course, to the extent this thing is really detecting gravity waves, and it's that like subtle of a level – they're all over the place, right? Like, so this is what they're saying is once they're tuning the thing up more and more, they may be getting signals like this every single day.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not crazy that you would get it the next day, because once you could – if these things exist – like, listen, if you're detecting radio waves, you turn on the radio detector. By the way, I should mention that the thing is called LIGO, which stands for a laser interferometer. Let me find it.
Because – there is the example that I've seen where it's all come from this event where the black holes have crashed into each other. How are they able to determine that these gravity waves are from that and not the gravity that surrounds us anyway? I think the point I'm making is...
Well, because there's a variance, right? Like, I mean, that's the thing. What I don't know...
Are we tuning into a show halfway through, or are we just at the beginning of the show, which is different from what we've been living through, if you see my point.
Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. They skipped the W.
Well, because like,
it's gravitational hyphen wave.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be LIGWO. That would be weird.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was the one thing that I could not find good answers. Like, I understand how you can orient something based on the difference of it landing at two different places. But I don't know how you can necessarily tell the distance, right? Like, because if the thing was slightly different...
That's what I'm saying. Is this an event, or is this just us finally figuring out a constant state of being?
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter. Like, these waves are probably all the time, right? Like, it's just that this is the first time we've been able to detect it.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Because, again, when you read the story, if you're a layman like me and you read these things, your mind immediately goes to an event has occurred and there are ripples of whatever this is moving through space. And with that, because the analogy is always used that someone's throwing a rock in a pond and the circles go out, well, that's but before the pond is flat, the rock begins it and it keeps going until the energy's gone.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is because of the way this story has been presented to me, my immediate default is that something's occurred causing these things. But my question is, this may have been the way it's always been. Like, what I'm saying is,
people are dropping rocks all the time.
The pond was never flat. Right. That's my point.
Right,
yeah.
Right. No, I think that's definitely right. I mean, think about radio waves. Like, I was looking up, and because I was thinking, for reasons we'll talk about, the clearest analogy, despite the fact that it is not the same, it's not a wave of the same stuff that radio waves are.
Okay.
You know, it's a different thing entirely because it's a different force. Just like radio waves are electromagnetic waves. That's an electromagnetic force. It's a gravity wave. It's a different force entirely. It's like at a fundamental level, it's something different. But the analogy is like to say, okay, how did we find radio waves? How do we create radio waves? And nowadays we take it all for granted. I mean, everything, you know, your TV, your phone,
it's all out.
Everything is all, enough, are all waves of communication and things and detection. Well, and the first people who created it, they basically created something to create the waves and receive the waves at the same time. And this goes back to like the 1850s where people were creating devices that would like make a buzz, you know, electrical buzz over here, and it would manifest itself in a detection there. But if we had turned on, like if you had had a radio telescope, if you had had a radio, I mean, when you turn on a radio and you get static,
those are radio waves.
Those are radio waves. It's the general waves that exist in the, in the world.
I mean, everything has radiation.
Right.
I mean, again, I always think of it as just something that happens when there's an explosion. But basically,
everything. Kind of stars, sun, and things like that. And so when you get these crazy signals and you turn on the TV, that's the variances from sunspots and whatever it is going on out there. And it's only when you can tease it out or control it that you can then make it into stuff or read it the right way.
So what does this mean for us?
Yeah, I mean, for one thing, the first wave is going to be observation, right? Like, so now one of the big things about this is it's essentially a telescope, right? Okay. And it's a telescope to see things that we've never been able to see before because light and electromagnetic energy gets sucked into black holes. We can't really see them. Like, when they talk about black holes, it's based on detection of surrounding events, because we can tell, okay, there's a bunch of stuff in this area of the sky, the galaxy or the universe that's behaving in a way that clearly there's a gravitational influence that we can't see through any of our telescopes because all that stuff is sucked into the gravity. Well, gravity runs away from that stuff. So now we can see things that we could never see before. Moreover, gravity is not interfered with by mass. It goes through mass. So, you know, there's a certain I can't play a radio station around the Earth. I mean, make it a strong enough one, you can get it through or around the Earth. But generally speaking, you only have a limited. And so it's, the same thing goes for astronomy. There's only so far. We can make better detection.
It's like the relationship between lead and magnetism.
Right, but mass and stuff interferes with it. Well, not so gravity. Gravity just goes through all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's influencing the fabric of the universe. So now you start with this radiation stuff. One of the things they mentioned is apparently this thing is really only designed to detect a certain frequency of wave. You know, because waves basically have different frequencies. I mean, that's what makes light visible versus other types or different.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say frequencies, wavelengths. I guess that's sort of the same thing. Anyway,
frequency is wavelength.
Yeah. So it's not amplitude. That's am. It's okay.
It's the gap between the waves rather than the height of the waves. Yeah.
So this thing is really tuned into a particular wavelength. It's like your radio.
Yeah.
Can't pick up cell phones because your radio is designed to pick up radio waves in this particular wavelength. So this thing, so now they could build other ones that will detect other frequencies and all, you know, there's all these other like levels of doing it. So we pull that all together. Now we have an ability to see things in the universe we've never seen before, including, remember all this, that we talked about this before, you can get back to the beginning of time, because there's the part about this is that now when we look back at something that's this long ago, we're essentially looking at a period in the universe's history that is past, and there's nothing like that anymore. So like they've gone back even with the regular, and they feel like they've gotten X close to the Big Bang, you know, or 400 million, whatever heck of number of years they're away from it. Well, this should be able to look further back, because those waves, you're going to be able to see more things that pass through stuff that isn't lost to gravity. All it's going to open a whole, it's like basically turning on a new
sense. But here's my question then, in all sincerity. How far back can they see?
Well, I mean,
could they see back to the beginning?
That's the idea.
Because
this gets into the whole thing. We had a whole debate last time. Or not a debate, I should say. The thing that I always struggle with is, I get the fact that if something's really, really far away, that you can, because over the shifting of time and the amount of time it takes, the way you're going to see back there. But if the Big Bang was when all mass was, you know, in the size of a bowling ball, you know, in the sentence, just to use another ball, bowling another ball reference, ball. You know, and we all shot away from it, how do we see that in the past? We were there. Like I mean, in the sense that all mass was there in the first place. Now, the only thing I can think of is when you have a Big Bang, you move away from it. So, like, the Big Bang, like, ran you away so far. I was using the analogy of sound. Like, if I could physically
move
faster than a speed of sound, right?
You leave a wake.
You shoot a gun.
It's like a ship leaving a wake. You can see back where the ship, but at some moment, the wake is overcome by the ocean and it disappears. Or a contrail from a plane.
Yeah.
Well, you can look at a contrail and you can see it. And what I'm saying is you can, theoretically, you can look back at the path that the plane has traveled. But at some moment.
But if you're in the plane, though, I mean, like, you're really looking. Like, that's not catching up with you.
Yeah, all right.
The analogy I thought of was if you shot a gun here.
Okay.
And I could move faster than the speed of sound. I could hear the gun right now, like while you shot the gun off, because I'd be right there. But then I immediately run away from you faster than the speed of sound. Then I'm going to move ahead of the sound wave.
Okay.
Like let's say I could, in moments, I could get 100 miles away from you, the speed of sound, and then I'm assuming I could hear a gun from 100 miles away. The wave will then catch back up with me. So even though I was there when it happened, I got away from you fast enough that the wave caught up with me. So if the Big Bang shot all matter out.
It's
so fast that we got out faster.
Okay.
Then the information could be catching up to us later on. I don't know if that's the right way it works. I haven't seen anything about this, but that was my personal theory.
Well, I mean, it's a good enough theory at this time.
Okay. Yeah. So detection, right? That's the first wave of this stuff. Well, what else do people do with radio waves? They communicate with them, right? So now you got to think, okay, if I can detect this stuff,
okay,
can I figure out a way to create the radio gravity waves just like I create radio waves? Now, first instinct you'd have to say is no, because obviously gravity, you know, this tiny gravity wave required the mass of two black holes to come together.
Yeah, we can't generate that kind of energy.
I can't create a radio station, you know, like, new TV station. It's broadcasting on gravity waves. We've got these two black holes here that we're going to manipulate. But who's to say what people can figure out going forward, right? You know, the radio broadcasters have gotten smaller and smaller, you know, meaning the transmission equipment's got, who knows, maybe people figure out gravity and they'll figure out a way to manipulate it. Or you can figure out a way to detect it at such low levels that you don't need all that mass anymore. Who knows?
Okay.
So, but you'd think that'd be the next wave. And then the other question becomes, you know, can you manipulate, because all this gravity is manipulating the fabric of the universe, can you now create new modes of shifting reality or time travel or whatever the heck it is? I mean,
you can ride along with it, but I don't think you can manipulate it.
I thought surfing. Can you surf a gravity wave?
Well, maybe I think you can somehow.
I don't know. You can't surf a radio wave, so I'm not sure
how you can. No, but what I'm saying is you can. In principle, you could.
Yeah.
But I will say this: you cannot manipulate it.
Yeah,
because it does appear that gravity is the overwhelming force of the universe.
That's it. And as I told you before this, and your mind went to the same place, this entire thing has made a movie that we've debated before better in retrospect. Interstellar.
I don't know.
Like, the entire plot of the turning event of Interstellar.
It makes it better than it makes it worse.
There's communication through gravity. That gravity is the way something out there. And in fact, don't they ultimately conclude that, you know, who's communicating with them? Ourselves.
Well,
like,
but that's
the future cells communicating back with us through gravity.
I'm going
to
concede.
And let me point out something, like, just to add another element to there. One of the main guys who was quoted in one of the articles I read is a Caltech scientist who was one of the main, like, so they're explaining the fact that he's being quoted that he heard about this research about the device in the 70s to detection, the LIGO, what ultimately became LIGO. He heard about it in the 70s. He's been fascinated with it. He thought he didn't get enough stuff, blah, blah, blah. And then there's, and by the way, the next biggest thing he did was he was a consultant on the movie Interstellar.
Well, this is the thing. Apparently, Kip Thorne, and again, the consultant for the movie.
And you said you didn't do any research.
No, but I knew about this. Mm-hmm. Kip Thorne is one of those scientists. Again, to bring it back to where we started, there are two different people who say they're Battlestar Galactica fans, but they're both fans of entirely different things.
Right.
There's a lot of people who think Kip Thorne is a wacko.
Well,
a lot of scientists.
Yeah.
And probably. A lot of these scientists are either discovering something or they're spending their time proving that someone else didn't discover it. I mean, there's a lot of people within the scientific community who think Kip Thorne plays it fast and loose with some of the rules of it all.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, yes, on the face of it, that this discovery validates both the fact that Interstellar makes sense and then also validates the fact that I think Interstellar's a load of cobblers. Yes, it is true
right.
that you may be able to communicate via gravity.
The notion of pushing books off of bookshelves seems
wrong. No. You and I have both said, or you have said, in the last 10 minutes alone, that the issue isn't what's there to be used. The issue is there ever going to be a way to use it?
Right.
You use the example of surfing. Well, there's no way to surf a radio wave. Right. The trouble with Interstellar, the movie, is it goes, yeah, we're going to be able to use gravity. Yeah. But then it just makes up something completely bogus to go, oh, and that's how we did it. Don't ask any questions. And, oh, okay, he can now communicate.
It's slightly close, I didn't even know gravity wave was a thing until this stuff got announced.
But this is what annoys me about gravity, the movie, Interstellar, all this sort of science. I was always led to believe that a black hole crushed everything, which was why light couldn't escape. So how could Matthew McConaughey have lived through it in the first place?
Bending time space.
Again, but that's one of those bogus answers. This has come because these black holes are so powerful. Light cannot escape.
Right.
So seriously, some dude in a spaceship, he's lasted a millisecond. Light can't escape. These things are so powerful. So some dude flying around in a steel and aluminium and plastic spaceship, he's being crushed like that. Or even quicker than that. And so that's my point.
Yeah. Well, something like that.
There you go.
I mean, I think it's fascinating. I mean, and I do think...
So to really understand...
If only for the elements of observation that it's going to open for us and what it might mean there, it's pretty amazing. And these people are pretty excited. They're almost guaranteed somebody's going to get a Nobel Prize out of this stuff.
There's two other movies I'm going to recommend if you want to try and get your head around this. Donnie Darko and Time Cop, because they have waves.
You know, I've never sat down and watched all of Donnie Darko.
It's hard work,
yeah.
But it's very good. And at the end of the day, you sort of sit there. It's one of those things. It's an exercise in style as much as anything else. Because the whole conceit is it's all to do with wormholes and time travel. That none of us really understand. So you sit there and go, oh, okay. But it's a very atmospheric movie, very good performances. And you know, when you watch it, I always think of it as Donnie Darko. I used to think of it as Donnie Darko, a Jake Gyllenhaal movie, and, oh, by the way, I've forgotten her name, and I can see her face now. And Drew Barrymore is in it. When you sit and watch it, it's like watching some TV show where he's in it. Oh, she's in it. It actually has a cast of all kinds of people who you go, oh, wow, he's in Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
But it's a very entertaining movie.
Yeah.
There's also someone in a rabbit suit.
Yeah.
If you're a big fan of the original Battlestar Galactica, this might be up your alley.
So the other recommendations.
Have you seen Time Cop? With Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Maybe.
See, that's about waves in time and everything. Yeah.
So, but other, as long as we're doing recommendations, so on the serious side, if you're actually interested in this stuff, you started with a Guardian article, which was pretty decent and comprehensive, but the Washington Post has run at least a half a dozen different articles on different elements of this, like the work to get to this point, you know, the science behind it.
This was a big story.
Videos, and Joel Aschenbach, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yes.
He's the Washington Post science writer, although he's got somebody else that does science writing too as well. I guess they got multiple, but he's a very, very good
writer. If you
have
hung with this far.
So go check the Washington Post.
Check out these
articles.
This has been everywhere this week.
All these articles linked to each other. There's a long article in the New Yorker magazine, which, let me see if I can pull up the author now, that is pretty interesting. It's like, you know, how do we get to this point? It's by Nicola Twiley, Twilley. Gravitational waves exist. The inside story of how scientists finally found them.
Yeah.
And it's like a long form article.
Shouldn't
that's
it be
pretty
twiddly?
Interesting. Twilley.
Oh, Twilley. Okay, I thought it was a D in there. It shouldn't be Twiddly.
Pretty good. And like, there's more about the guy from the Maryland who, like, you know, he started thinking about. We had these lasers that go. He originally was like hanging big big rods of aluminum, thinking he could detect like vibrations in them or something like that, and it never really quite worked out. But he
I mean, it's a, well, when you were describing it, it's a similar theory. It's a bummer to sonar. That
he passed away 15 years ago,
but yeah, he was right.
No, no, conceptually, right, he just had to create devices. Yeah. Like, and that's why this thing costs so much. And there's some fascinating stuff about the equipment that was used to create this. And they're talking about putting one in space, you know, because then, you know, you're off of Earth and you're really isolated.
I know I have a tendency to make fun and undersell things, but this actually really is. Yeah, I mean, what you said before, you know, before you started explaining it for our listeners was the fact that this actually could be quite a momentous moment.
Yeah. I mean, what radio, the detection and dealing with radio waves meant for humanity. You know, that's just totally changed
society and everything. As much as I make fun of it, there is the notion, because then this is where I always get lost a little bit before we get out of the show. And this is what Einstein was always, I don't want to speak for Albert Einstein, obviously, most of us are conditioned to think of things as space or as time.
Right.
But the whole point is the two things are actually merged together.
Yeah.
And then at that moment, it starts to confuse me.
Yeah, that's the part I can't, like, that's why when they, I don't even want to say the fact that they say it's fluctuations in time space, because I'm like, in a whole element of confusion. Yeah. And then you get in the whole thing of people, basically things that go faster or nearer to or different gravities have experienced time differently. And I go, okay, that's now that gets too complicated.
That being said,
I like the bowling balls and the trampoline.
That being said, not having a true knowledge of space, time space does allow me to watch Jean-Claude Van Damme movies and not get hung up at the scientific inaccuracy. Anything else for this week?
I don't think so.
Do check out this stuff. It actually is fascinating, even if you're not into science. Yep. I mean, again, it's we're going to lay down a marker now. This could be one of the most momentous discoveries in the history of man.
Sure could.
So in 20 years, we were right.
Yeah, so we're proved right. we're still podcasting.
Hopefully. Or you can hear our podcasts from way, way back.
Oh, boy.
That's like the Jodie Foster movie.
Yeah.
Content. And they all get upset because, what's it, James Wood says, the first time we're speaking to aliens, it's a picture of Hitler or something. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Hopefully Hitler will be surpassed by the Atlantic Voice podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at atlanticvoice.net. Email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.